Little, currently working with Brother Ed in Prague, the congregation there. First time here, glad to be here. And it's kind of a shame. I grew up in the Springfield, Joplin, Missouri area. You would have thought I'd have been here before now. But the Lord's blessed so that I've been able to make it out. Have a little thought on my heart, and if I had to give this a title, I would call it Staying Faithful. You know, we have things in life that can cause us to want to change directions. I'm thinking, you know, as a person, most of us men folk, you know, you've got a career, you have to make a decision, you start working it, and then as you start working that career, sometimes things come along and you start questioning, do I really want to continue doing this? Is this what I want to do? Sometimes it's the Lord. I was in the military for a while, and you know, sometimes the idea of 20 years and got retirement and get out, but the Lord had a talk with me, and guess what? I didn't stay in the military. I got out. But we can have other things that come along. Sometimes you can have just things in life. You can have an industry that changes, and suddenly your job's disappeared, gone. Something comes along to force it to change, tragedies. Other times it's us. We can get tired and bored of what we're doing and just want to change. Well, I had a young man working for me when I worked for Cox Communications down in New Orleans. He was an engineer, and part of our job was when there were issues, we were trying to follow up with problems in the network and see what was the root cause and how can we stop that from ever happening again. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, but the goal was, where possible, let's stop these things. And as I worked with this young engineer, I noticed that if I asked an analytical question, why is this happening, or I wonder if we can figure out, you know, whatever this, why this situation comes about, it was almost like he would just fixate on that. And usually within, if not that same day or the next day, he would have done all kinds of data analytics and spreadsheets and broke down things and looked up and had an answer. And not just an answer, but suggestions. You know, you said that, and I was thinking about this, and I remember seeing this over here, and nice. And I asked him one time, I said, have you had any training in like data analytics or anything? He's like, no. I was like, I'm going to get you some. Because you're a natural at this. And, you know, as he continued to work, now, I didn't have in my department authorization to run a data analytics team. You know, I'm supposed to be focused on just fixing stuff. But as I began working with this young man and his consistency and his ability to listen and follow instructions, people started saying, hey, I wonder if we can borrow Mark because we got a project over here we're struggling with figuring things out. We'd love him to come in. And next thing you know, I'm getting asked by my boss, well, how many people do you have on your data analytics team? And I kind of chuckled. I said, well, I technically don't have one. If you go look at his job title, it's network engineer. But he's really sharp, and he's been very consistent. He's good at what he does. He kept going until eventually he ended up being pulled into a national corporate-wide data analytics team to go basically, you know, you could consider him like a hotshot team of going in, jumping into hard problems, doing deep analysis, and coming up with good solutions. But you know the reason why he kept getting pulled into that? He was consistent. He was faithful. That's why I noticed it, because I could just mention it, and he was on it, and coming back with good quality work. Now, one other thing I noticed about this young man as I got to know him personally, of course, if you're like, well, maybe it's just a Doolittle thing, but we tend to talk and get to know people. And so, you know, as I got to know him, I actually found out that this young man had a very strong belief in God. And it became apparent that's part of what was driving his faithfulness on the job. Because if he said he was going to do something, he took that serious. He said, you know, God says, let your yes be yes and your no, no. That's a very simple set of instructions, but have you ever thought about how challenging that is? We had a conversation on my current job just the other day about commitment. You said you were going to get it done. Why didn't you? Well, this came up and that come up. Well, did you know about that ahead of time? I probably should have. You know, but that faithfulness that he had, a lot of it came because of his underlying belief in the Lord and the need to be steadfast. And so what I would like to look at, though, I want us to start looking in the book of Daniel. We're not going to do a lot of reading, if y'all don't mind, because I'm probably going to touch on just about every chapter a bit. And there's 12 of them. And rather than have us reading for quite a bit this morning, I'm going to do a little bit of paraphrasing. So I want us to consider Daniel, about somebody that stayed faithful. And one thing I want to start off with is Daniel's name. Daniel's name means God who judges. So his name meant something to Daniel, apparently. Our first record of Daniel, starting there in chapter 1, and the story goes a little bit into chapter 2, was when he's deported. Now, based on what I can pull together, and this timeline is a rough estimate, so don't hold me to these numbers, but they're close enough for the purpose. He was probably deported to Babylon about 605 B.C. And him and a lot of the other young men that were from the royal family and nobilities and the rich young men, they were taken by King Nebuchadnezzar. He wanted them to go to Babylon. He said, I want the best and the brightest of this land. I want to bring them into our country. I want to train them up in our ways, teach them our knowledge, and assimilate them into our government and our way of system. I want the brightest minds so we can mold them and use them. So Daniel's brought in here, and estimated age of Daniel and his companions is about 15 to 17 years old when this happens. That's pretty young, isn't it? To find yourself drug into another land. And one of the first things they wanted to do to Daniel is rename him. Belteshazzar. Now that name means Bel's prince. Now Bel was a Babylonian god. And so this name was intended to indicate that you're going to be a person who has favor with our God, basically. I pondered on that. You're a young man. And from what we can see from his actions, we're going to be talking about here in a little bit, you're fairly devout for your God. And you're suddenly taken away out of your land, brought into captivity, and you're given the name of a foreign God as part of your new name. I don't know about you, but that would probably begin bothering me. I really don't want to be called that. Can we just drop that whole thing? Daniel works. Let's just go with Daniel. So he was given the new name. And then he was also said, we want you to eat this fancy food. The wine, the meats, everything's from the king's table. He wants you to be in perfectly physically good health. And this is where we start seeing the faithfulness pop out. In this young man at 15 to 17 years age, while in captivity in a foreign land. That, folks, to me, says something. And he has the nerve to go talk to the person in charge of him saying, hey, I don't want to eat that. I want to stay true to my roots. Can I get just some bean porridge and some good old clean water? I don't need the fancy stuff. The king's eunuch was like, well, hold on now. If you don't look healthy, when you go before the king, my neck's on the line. And I love the faith of Daniel because he says, give us a week. Now, I don't know how many of y'all have ever been on diets before. I've gone on them periodically. I'm on one now trying to maintain, if you will, or reduce, actually. But on a diet, do you expect in 1 week to see a drastic change? Not generally. You know you're going into it as a long-term thing. But Daniel knew that I trust God. And I trust God to be able to show the benefit in my following him. to this man. So he just said, give it a shot, 1 week. They were going to be 3 years in their training before they were presented to the king. So 1 week, the eunuch said, okay, 1 week, we can do that. At the end of 1 week, what did he see? Y'all look healthier. Look better, your skin's better. Okay, I'm taking away the fancy food and you all get the simple stuff. 15 to 17 years old. And he's already starting to put his flag in the ground, so to speak, that I am one of the Lord's. And not just I am one of the Lord's, but I'm willing to stand up for it. I'm willing to put my marker down for it. And so we see that after 3 years, Daniel and his friends are brought before the king. And if we were to actually read it here, yep, in first chapter, starting in verse 19, it says, and the king communed with them, and among all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all the matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even under the first year of King Cyrus. Now I want us to consider this. It's only been 3 years. So now these four young men are brought before the king. Their approximate ages would be between 18 to 20 years old. And because of their willingness to dedicate themselves before the Lord, it says that they were 10 times better at answering the king's questions than all of his existing wise men. 18 to 20 years old. Think the Lord's starting to bless them yet? And now we do know that, of course, he's still being referred to as Nebuchadnezzar. As Belteshazzar, which to me, I notice every time in these stories, it says either Belteshazzar, who is Daniel, or Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. What I've noticed in this is the name Daniel meant a lot to me. He did not like that name, Belteshazzar. So if we keep going on, we eventually run into where the king has a dream. This is kind of here in the second chapter. The king has a dream, and he wakes up from the dream, and it's disturbed him. It was a bad dream, except he can't remember it. So he calls his wise men together and says, hey, you all are the wise men. You can interpret dreams and stuff. I need to know what dream I had, and I need y'all to tell me what it meant. Well, they're like, we'd be glad to, king. Just tell us the dream. He's like, no, you don't understand. The dream is out of my head. You guys are supposed to be the smart ones that know this stuff. You tell me the dream and what it means. And they're like, king, we really need you to tell us. He gets mad. Kill them all. You're waiting for me to say something so you can make up a response because you obviously can't tell dreams. They go start rounding up the wise men. They come to Daniel and his friends, and Daniel's like, what's the hurry to kill us all? I'd kind of like a little more information. Explains the situation. He tells the guard that's coming around him, go tell the king that I can interpret for him. And that doesn't say Daniel knew what the dream was. What it says is Daniel said, go tell the king I can do this task. And then it says he got with his three amigos and said, hey, I need y'all to pray. I need to know what dream the king had, and I need to know the proper interpretation. Well, we know the outcome of the story. He comes in and he tells the king, look, don't kill anybody. Let me answer your question. He told him about the dream, what it meant. And he's promoted to the head of the province of Babylon and is able to say, well, can my three friends also be put into positions here with me? And they were. And he was promoted head of all the governors and wise men. And, you know, he's still in that 18 to 20-year-old range right now. Can you imagine if you were an 18-year-old captive into a foreign land and suddenly the king's appointing you over things? Because you're following the Lord and allowing him to lead and guide you? Now, he was still called Belshazzar in all of these exchanges, And if we keep following the stories, the next in chapter 3 is actually about the fiery furnace. Now, we don't see Daniel in here, in this story. We have no record of what he was doing. But what we do know is that Daniel's friends, they were thrown into the fiery furnace because they wouldn't bow down and worship. And by this time, it's estimated they were all about 30 to 35 years old. So some time's passed. And what struck me with this is, you know, you've been in captivity for 15 years. The faithfulness that Daniel called that group to 15 years earlier, when they were first taken captive, is paying off 15 years later. When they're being asked, bow down to this idol, no. You're going to burn, otherwise, okay. We've got a big God, and if he saves us, great. And if not, he's going to take us home. I don't see the problem, king. You know, you're the king. We'll submit to your authority. You know, they never once rebelled against the king. They didn't say, well, we're going to grab our pitchforks and keep you from throwing us in the fiery furnace. They just said, God's ultimately in charge, king. And if his will is that you throw us in the furnace and we die, we will accept his will. But we're going to trust God for what the outcome is. Of course, we know the outcome of that. You know, in these stories, they also were being called by foreign names. Now, I didn't look up what all of their names meant, but they had not been allowed to use their Hebrew names. And so they end up being thrown into the fiery furnace. And of course, the king's sitting there and he's watching and he's like, wait a minute, folks. How many people did we throw? Didn't we throw three in there? Yes. I see four. And now, he makes a statement, and one of them like the Son of God. Isn't that a curious statement for a person that's a non-believer to make? But you know, when God shows himself, people know. Think about what it says at the day of judgment when every knee shall bow and every tongue confess. People will know when the Lord Almighty shows up. It's amazing how the doubts disappear. And here the king is like, they're walking around. They're not being burned up. And it says he went and called them out of the fire. They came out. The people around him looking at him. No damage. No smoke smell. Now the robes have been burned off, which is quite interesting. And one of the interesting things out of this is the king made a decree. Now, he didn't decree that people should worship the Lord, but he did make a decree that nobody should speak ill about the Hebrew God. He said, nobody better disparage this God because we've not seen a God work like this. The awareness of who the Hebrew children were following was starting to come very public. And the king is like, you know, there is a reality in the God they believe that I haven't seen in other gods. And so I'm going to put a decree out that we don't want to anger this one. Now, he didn't quite fully grasp the God of heaven, but he grasped the power. He grasped what was going on. So then if we keep going, I think it's in chapter 4. Where he starts having Nebuchadnezzar has another dream about the big tree. And as he dreams about this tree and it comes, it gets cut down and he starts wondering what it is. And once again, he calls. Who does he call? He calls for the wise men again, and eventually ends up talking to Daniel, still calling him Belteshazzar, still hasn't fully recognized where Daniel's strength comes from. And he asks for the interpretation of the dream, and Daniel tells him, he said, well, if you want to know the reality of this dream, basically you're going to lose your mind, and your kingdom's going to be taken from you. And you're going to spend 7 years living as a wild beast. And then the Lord's going to restore you. And he did say, now, King, there may be a way to prolong that, to stave that off. You need to start walking righteously. You need to put your sins away from you. And we don't know how much the king listened. It did say it was 12 more months before the king had his, I'm going to call it his moment of pride. 12 months later, he had a moment of pride and look at what I've done. Look at my kingdom. Look at how great I am. And the Lord God from heaven said, you know that thing that was spoken about you? It's a reality. And so Nebuchadnezzar ended up being sent out into the wild, living out in the fields, eating grass. And after 7 years, it says he lifted up his head and he recognized God. He says in the book, you know, that I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. That's the 37th verse of the 4th chapter. The king now is getting to know not just the power, but God himself. He's aware of personally that God says, I can affect you. I think of our world today, and I just look at the power struggles on, it seems like, every continent, every nation. You've got power struggles and people vying for spots. And you know what my comfort is, folks? Whatever happens will only happen because God says that's allowed to happen. Amen. And so I can take comfort. Because it also says he won't send anything to us that we can't bear. And so I take pleasure in that, knowing that God's in charge. And then if we move on into the 5th chapter, we get to where, now this is actually moving on down into, I should say, when Nebuchadnezzar was having his madness, Daniel by this time is about 50 years old. A lot more time has passed. But the same faithfulness that started him on the path at 15, held his friends through their trial in their 30s and 35s, is still holding him to where he can talk to the Lord and get help for people when he's 50. Now, Nebuchadnezzar passes on, and Belshazzar, sometimes Belshazzar and Belteshazzar confuse me, because Belshazzar is the king and Belteshazzar is Daniel's name. But Belshazzar, the king, he does his feast. This is the one where he goes in and he says, let's go take all the dishes and stuff from the temple that the Israelites had, and let's throw a party and let's just praise our gods of wood and stone and silver and iron, because, you know, we defeated them. And as we know from that story, the king's sitting there in his celebration, and all of a sudden he looks up and there's a hand writing on the wall. And I find it, it says over by a candlestick. It was a hand writing where it could be seen. And many, many tikkel ufarsin. And the king gets nervous. It says his knees were quaking and knocking together. And so, you know, he's like, what does this mean? Who can tell me? And I believe it was his grandmother said, well, you know something? There was a man that worked for your dad, for your granddad. And what I like is she goes, and his name's Daniel, but he was called Belteshazzar. I love how suddenly the reference to God is coming back into Daniel's life. People are starting to realize Belteshazzar isn't him. His name's Daniel. And, you know, she goes, he was wise, can interpret dreams. And so the king calls him in. And in the exchange with him, the king actually calls him Daniel. Never calls him Belteshazzar. Which I found interesting. I loved that reading that. But unfortunately, what Daniel had to tell him was, this means your kingdom's been measured out. And I find it interesting. It's been counted out twice. You know, God is faithful himself to not make mistakes in judgments. And I mean, I think of Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot said, I want to come, you know, God came down and said, I want to see what's happening in these towns for myself. God knew. But the great loving justice of God says, if I'm going to do this, though, I want to be absolutely certain because my judgment is just. And so even here, I've measured you multiple times. You've been weighed in the balance and found wanting. Your kingdom's being taken from you. The king was killed that night. But not after he had promoted Daniel and gave him honor. And at the time of this, Daniel would have been between 81 to 85 years old. Staying faithful. And now, I don't know about you, but generally people that come in and take over a kingdom, they kind of kill off or imprison the people that's in charge. And I don't know if I'd have been Daniel, if I'd have been too pleased knowing what's about to happen. If you're suddenly trying to put me in a place of power in your kingdom that's about to go down, because I know where it's going, King. You don't need to do anything for me. But what's interesting is the king that came in, Darius the Mede, he also saw something in Daniel. And I've been pondered. We don't really have a record of exactly what drew his eyes to King Darius, to where King Darius basically ended up putting Daniel over everybody. But I wonder if there was the story of the handwriting on the wall and the telling of what had happened over the years to King Darius, where he's like, well, if this man is in touch with the living God, I want him on my side. That's a man that I want to treat well. So, you know, he ended up in a position of prominence. But with that, once again, comes people that want to challenge. There were the people he was put over. You know, the Bible talks about respecting the hoary head, the gray hairs, those that's lived a long time and probably has wisdom to share. And I wonder how many of these other leaders that were against Daniel were maybe younger to middle-aged men who, looking at Daniel, maybe walking slower than they did, maybe more feeble of voice, and they just, I don't see what the king sees in him. So they trick the king. They get the king to put a law in there that says, for the next 30 days, anybody that asks anything besides the king, ask of it, you know, help from anywhere besides the king, has to be thrown in the lion's den. Why did they ask for that particular law? If we think about that for a minute, it's because, as we read in the story, he was faithful at doing something, wasn't he? The Chaldeans and those were standing there watching him, and they said, "We can't find. He's not doing anything wrong. He's not accepting bribes. He's not mishandling money. He's solid in all of his advice he gives. We can't find anything to go to the king and get him crossed up on, except he bows before his God three times every day. Every day. King." We just, you're a great king, and you know, they puffed up his little pride a bit, and you know, people should come to you for their needs and sign that into law. I find it a little amusing. The king discovered when Daniel was brought before him in a way that he'd been tricked, and it said he stayed up late into the evening trying to figure out how to circumvent his own laws that aren't supposed to be changeable. And he couldn't. Not if he's going to have his laws respected, because that's the law. And so the king actually goes in there, and let me find it here. This is the 6th chapter, verse 16. It says, "Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Now I love the king's speaking this, because he sounds so confident. Be brave, Daniel. The Lord that you're trusting in will deliver you. But if we keep reading down through here, we discover how trusting the king himself was. Because in verse 18, "Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste into the den of lions. When he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions?" You know, the king had had a doubt. Sometimes when we go through trials and we may be wondering, Lord, why me? It may not be for you. You may be the trial that's for someone else. In this case, Daniel's going into the lion's den was to prove to the king how real this living God that Daniel can, I love the words, continually served from 15 years old. Now into his early 80s. "And Daniel said unto the king, O king, live forever." And once again, if we look at this, now the king puts a decree out. But this time it's not, don't say anything bad about this God because it's a living God. Now the decree is, everybody needs to fear and tremble before this God. No exceptions. This is the living God. This is not a God of stone. This is not a God of brass, of wood. And once again, there is no reference to Belteshazzar as a name. It's all Daniel in these last few stories. Back to the one who God is judging. And to me, that's the beauty of Daniel. Don't know why his parents named him that. But somehow as a young man, he connected with God. And he also connected with God is judging. God's going to be looking at my life. And no matter when it is, when I stand before him for that judgment, I want him to say, well done. We do know Daniel continued to live, they estimate, up into his early 90s. He lived throughout the entire Babylonian captivity. We don't have any record that he made it home. He may have made it home quietly as an old man and died in Jerusalem somewhere. We don't know. But what we do know is that he was a man who stayed faithful. From the time the people were taken out of captivity up until the time of Cyrus, which is the king that allowed the children of Israel to go back home and start rebuilding things. And when I think about one man, I've oftentimes heard people say, but what can I do? I'm just one person. When we read the stories in the Bible of changes that were made, how many times is it big groups of people that make the changes? The Syrian Naaman with leprosy. When I read that story, I'm amazed. A little girl who had been taken captive spoke to a man about what God could do, and before that story is over with, two kings are exchanging letters. So this man can go see a prophet to get healing. Because a little girl said God can do it. Her faith was still there. 7 years old. I look around this congregation, you know, and I think about the span of Daniel's life. We've got young people, teenagers. We've got those on up in years. All of us have an opportunity to continue to show to the Lord we're faithful. Daniel's last few years wasn't spent in big things, but he had visions. Visions that he shared, prophecies of the future, of judgment. And we have them today because he continued to be faithful all the way to the end. Y'all pray for me.